Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. It is such a nice day here in the South. You know what, though? I am super sick of my air conditioning. I don't think I'm ever going to shut that thing off year-round these days. The weather must be really, really changing to keep it up in the 80s this week. Can you believe it? It is just unbelievable. So today, we're going to be talking about naturivore. What the heck does that word mean? I know so many people are making dietary changes, but now it's in the month of December, and we're like, hey, I'm just throwing that out the window. I don't really care about that. But then, you know, you look to January and you say, I really want to start making a change in my life. Now the new healthcare thing comes down the pike. What's that going to do for me? Things are really going to be changing. Are you really going to be taking care of yourself? Because high deductibles, you know, being able to get into a doctor, all questionable. And where are you going to be? But today, we're going to give the power back to you. It's all about what can you do for yourself. Because if you don't do something for yourself, really what are you going to be able to do? And oh my goodness, there's noise in my background. I'm sorry to the listeners. And today my guest is Dr. Charles Harp. He is the author of Naturivore Power. And he's going to be talking to us about how he, as an MD, had such a life-changing event after medical school. You know, they all have these changes before medical school or as they go through medical school. Some drop out, some kind of just say, oh, well, I'll just do what I'm doing. But he had a change after, and he will be sharing with us how does that affect the way he works with his patients. Because, you know, when you have an effect, you can't but help to share that with other people. You know, I knew a heart surgeon, and I think this was about maybe 25 years now. He would go in and he would be doing all these stents on the people and bypasses and everything. And he'd come out and his lunch would be sprouts on a certain kind of bread with certain kind of chicken. And he had to have this purified water. And he was doing everything he was supposed to be doing. He would always go out in the parking lot and run if he couldn't make it to the lake to run. But when you went in with this patient, he would just say, okay, surgery worked. This is what you do. Go back to your other doctor. He didn't share or help his patients at all with the wonderful knowledge that he was doing for himself to prevent a heart problem. He didn't want to share and give it out. So, you know, this knowledge is not golden. It's not something that you have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for. It's not something that you should hide or you should say, oh, well, it's my secret. This is something that you share, how you make changes, and that's what Dr. Harp did. So, Dr. Harp, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gallagher.
It's a pleasure having you with us.
Yeah, it's a great day here in the South, too, for me, but probably a little more chilly.
Oh, I'd like a little cool air.
I'm here in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Is there snow?
No snow. It's probably about 50 degrees, but we had a cold spell, and it's warming up a little bit now.
Wow. Well, you know, it's going to be 80s all week here, and I just don't think it's ever going to quit. Even, you know, all of the plants are still blooming like nobody's business here, and it's kind of crazy. You know, I really want to shut off that air conditioner. Well, so Dr. Harp, you're an MD. And I know you've written this book, and we'll get to it in a little bit, but can you tell us a little bit about your experience? Like, let's go back a little bit farther. I mean, you went to regular MD school, and did you have any awakenings then? And as I've said, it's been after your training you had an awakening.
Well, during undergraduate, I pursued a biology degree. I was always interested in the workings of biological systems and even, you know, other animals and everything, and with physiology classes, microbiology, even oceanic studies. But And growing up in Miami, Florida, I spent a lot of time in the ocean, just really was connected to that. But I guess I pursued medicine, you know, with the intent to help people from that regard. And for the first 8 years of practice, it really went well. I mean, there's a lot of power to be said about medicine, and I still use that power this day, too. There's a power that's lacking sometimes when we're so powerful on the medical side, we tend to usurp the power of the person. And I think right now I've had an awakening that's made me realize that we have so much more power inside of us that should be used and is more beneficial than perhaps what can be done in medical systems.
You know, so many times clients would come in and they would say, you know, I have something wrong with me. But they really know that they're just coming in and telling you what's wrong with them for that moment. They could go out the door and that's not their issue anymore. Or they could think when they make the appointment that they have these issues, they come to you and they're saying something totally different. So really it's the power of what is presenting to them at this time that is an issue for them, that you're really, as a doctor, trying to say, okay, you're giving me limited information and I'm supposed to form an opinion and a diagnosis on that.
Well, that's a very interesting point, because I actually speak to that a great deal in the book, Nature for Power, Transcending Industrial Food and Medicine, because within us, we have our own context of our lives. You know, it comes from within you. The natural order is what I term it. And if we're engaged in our health and spend time making ourselves healthy and investing in ourselves through food and activities that are positive, then basically you're learning along the way about yourself. And then when you come to me as a physician, you will know more about yourself in a more practical way. And a lot of times in this day and age, I find people are searching on the internet or going to doctors and specialists, and they're getting very narrow pieces of information, potentially very potent information, but it has no context. And it may all be true, but it may not be true to a larger context, the whole body, the whole life. And that's where I see is, you know, people come in with complaints, and really it's, and when I look back at how they live, these complaints have been there in a sense that they've been just ignoring them. And finally they got loud enough that they paid attention and brought them in to me. But I try to, you know, make them aware that it's sort of how they live, and the better knowledge they have about themselves, the better I can help them.
Well, can you describe what the word naturevore means to you? You know, that is the title of your book, and it's a word I'm not familiar with.
And yeah, you shouldn't be, because I coined it. So it was by accident. It was just a fluke. It has sort of an interesting little story, and it's described in the book as well. A naturevore basically is defined in the book as an organism that does not consume manufactured foods, instead relying solely on natural whole food for nourishment. It's also like a person with a strong ethic of self-preservation who internalizes the principles of the natural order, which again was argued and defined in the book. And also I like to think of it as a person that interacts with nature to improve his physical condition. And with that said, the reason it came about was it became sort of an identity for me. And I had to give it a name, just, you know, because you can focus better on an identity with a name. And I wasn't really a vegan. So I coined the word naturevore because I eat natural foods, but I do eat meat. And so it was just sort of my take on my own identity that I just came up with one day.
Well, you know what I find too, though, is that when we say about foods and, you know, eating naturally foods and not preserved foods or otherwise prepared foods. So many people would say, well, that's just what humans always did. And it's not what humans always did. The Amish don't eat that way to this day. So there are cultures that don't eat that way. They don't eat packaged foods or preservatives or chemicals or whatever that might be. But also, too, when you look at your dog, you say, oh, well, you know, well, I'm not going to give my dog, you know, something like would I pour hydrogen peroxide in her water, or would I pour this strange form of calcium in there, or would I pour some more weird sulfur in there? You'd say, oh, that's going to hurt the dog. But yet when you look at a package and you read some of the ingredients, you go, that is what I am eating. You know, we are supposed to be, as humans, such intelligent beings, yet we're really doing a disservice to ourselves by giving our power away, as you've talked about in the industrial food medicine, food companies. They've really taken our power and said, hey, I'll run with it. I'll fix you up, you know. That's on the food side. And then the medicine side says, hey, I'll fix you up. I'll give you a drug that'll fix you up better. So really, we as people have given our power out. And now, how do you even find out what to do with that?
Well, and that's part of the luxury of being human, right? We're comfortable in our own intellect, and we make things, and then we tend to, but that's provided a huge bias to us in our own minds, that we think newer is better, man-made's better. You know, we tend to think that anything that's more complex is better, to a fault. And when it goes into the foods and things, see, I grew up, my story is very typical on manufactured foods and fast foods, and probably more so than even most people, but for various reasons. But nevertheless, when I look back, I see that I changed my own identity through those belief systems that, you know, newer was better, and the consistency that can be brought by industry is actually, it seems good, but at the same time, it steals the value of having inconsistencies in life that can bring flavor, can bring appreciation and things. And you become numb, I think, with manufactured foods and medicines, and they blunt a lot of our sensory abilities. And it's a sort of a deep thing, because humans are very complex creatures, but we make ourselves that way.
And we think about, too, you keep talking about the organism. We talk about the body as an organism, and we don't even give it the nourishment or the items that it needs. When we put food in, it's because I see that, I want that, and therefore I'm going to get it. But we think nothing of, or even know, I can tell you probably if you took a room of 100 people, you'd might have piece of one person that might know what you're talking about when you say what the body actually needs, because they really don't know.
No. And what's interesting is food has a different definition. And again, words are addressed in my book, how I've unraveled them, that they don't have the meaning they once had. Because if you think about it, food nowadays applies to things that basically have no nutritive characteristics, yet is
right.
Classified as a food. So, I mean, right there you start to see that, boy, we've come a long way and made complexities in our own mind that drive us to do bad behaviors and belief systems that just make us sick and tear down our natural abilities and natural healing and power within us.
You know, we talk so many times, I do with clients, and they say, oh, well, there's a certain calcium that I use, and but I looked on the bottle, and it says from seashells. And it's like, okay, are we going to crumble up seashells, and we're going to have those today? And it's like, really? You know, and it's the power of knowing or not knowing, you know?
Right.
So how do you work with your tell us about when you hit the wall, what changed and how that happened?
Well, Well, I basically, to sum it up, I didn't develop a cancer or heart condition per se. Fortunately, I was able to stop the progression of my what I call cellular corruption before it got to that extent. But I was certainly not comfortable in my own skin would be probably the best way to put it. And it was sort of a total body, like, realization that this is not the true me. Just looking at myself in the mirror, I speak of in the book, that, you know, I had developed when I, one day, you know, you look at yourself in the mirror all the time, but I'd looked in the mirror one day and I said, gee, I don't look like anything in those history books of a modern or of a human being. I mean, I was 55 pounds overweight. I was had blotchy skin and my joints ached. I mean, I wasn't as physically competent as I knew I should be or could be. And I hit a wall that I was sick of feeling that way and being that way. And I felt, well, I'm hypocritical at work, you know. I hear I'm telling people, you know, you got to do diet and exercise or whatever, and I wasn't doing what I was telling people to do. And, you know, all things said, it was the change that made me more of the believer, because just a little bit of change over a little bit of time reinforced, hey, this is doable. This is real. This is right. I can feel better. I can do better for myself. I mean, and then it was later as I developed more change and became more positive and more certain in what I was doing, I was able to convey that to other people and start to believe that, hey, this needs to be said. And your lead-in was perfect, the way the surgeon, because that could be me today, where I could develop my own health, go into work, and just give out the medicines and just, you know, keep the status quo. But I don't have to do that, and I'm choosing to be different now, which, you know, has other ramifications or whatever, but nevertheless, I've chosen to be different because I just want to feel good about everything I do, not just how I take care of myself, but I think how I work is part of how I take care of myself. And I'm sure you're well versed in holism and holistic beliefs and all that. And yeah,
I think when people come to you, they like to know what you're saying to them. Have you been there? Have you been down that road? Have you experienced that? And can you tell me how, if I'm going down that road, what I might look for? So an example would be is if you didn't feel well and you said, well, I had a cold, and I'm telling them to take homeopathy for their cold, and they're saying, well, can you tell me what that means? And you can say, well, I did this one and I felt better. I did this one and I didn't work. And I did this one and it was great. You know, so in other words, if you can relate to them, that is generally 99% of the goal, because, you know, as the heart surgeon did, you know, hey, go see your primary care. Your primary care is never going to tell you go on a diet. They're going to hand you a sheet that they got printed off from whatever source. We don't need to name names, and, you know, on your way. But if you, as you've done in your book, is, you know, you've said, I had to lose weight. This is how I did it. It's an example of how you might be able to lose weight, or how you might be able to get healthier, then that carries a whole lot more weight, because they can look at you and say, okay, tell me what happened, tell me how it worked, and tell me how it didn't work, which is much more important than handing me a sheet of paper on my way out the door.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, showing my own investment into this whole process and belief system is valuable to the people. I think they certainly see it and feel it. And any information I give, I mean, it was sort of by trial and error, and it's all more intuitive, and it's, you know, written in different sources and different, you know, borrowed different pieces of literature and stuff like that. But basically what I've done in the book is outline what I do for me, and you can take it or leave it and take parts of it if you want and leave the rest. I mean, it's, I always tell people, you have to develop your own health. You have to develop your own system. I mean, there is no absolute cookbook of how to be healthy, because we're all different. We have different tastes. We have different beliefs that will come to bear on that. But we have to own it, and I think that's where we're most strong, is when we own what we've achieved, and we've done it ourselves. And that's why in my clinic, I think I've been able to make more change and more people quicker with the tool of this book, because it's turned out to be a really valuable tool. But I think it's given me that confidence in the presentation that, here, I own my health. This is what I do. This is what I've done. You could do it too. And I don't mean you to be exactly like me. Just check this out and see if anything's helpful.
I think anytime someone says, well, I can't be that, well, okay, but I'm not asking you to be that. What I'm saying is if you're 100 pounds overweight and you lost 10, then in context, you are healthier than you were last week. And that's the goal, is motion and movement. You know, everybody says, well, I can't be, you know, the N person. I can't be wearing that size 4 or 2 or whatever. I mean, I don't wear a 4 or 2 either. I haven't seen a 4 or 2 my whole life. I don't even remember it. But my daughter walks around in a 00, you know. It's just the way it is. But that's just who she is. But I'm healthier on my side because of the way I do my, I make my choices, and she's healthier on her side. So really expecting, you know, when people say, I have to have a healthier life, I have to make all these things, and you know, we're giving out this information where you need to do a, quote, diet. Everybody has this assumption that they need to be something that they have, you know, past memories of. I have to be a 0 or a 4 or whatever. And that's not at all what you and I are saying. We're saying about getting healthier today than you were last week, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I look at this, the new year, you know, coming up, and I remember last New Year's I was kidding around with my workout buddy, and I said, you know, this year I am really going to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is, you know, we joke about that because it's an ongoing thing. I mean, I hope I'm never, like, feeling at this point that I'm ever truly there. I want to be always pursuing that ideal of health, whatever that is. You know, it's in my mind, deep inside of me. It's like what I call in the book a primordial wisdom. I'm going towards a destination. I have yet to be there. I have yet to define fully. See, I don't want to ever reach it in a sense. I just want to keep progressing better. And I think that's why, one way you don't get stuck in your own rituals and beliefs is you continually improve. And there's a lot to be said about just you make it up as you go along, as much as anything, I think. You try things, they work or they don't work. I mean, that's how you know the truth that applies to you, right? If somebody gives
right.
you a piece of information and it makes your life better, well, heck, that's got to be your truth. And it may not be somebody else's truth because it may not make them better.
Right.
But that doesn't mean it won't make you better. So I think we got to be careful about, you know, what's right and wrong. We just sort of do what's best for us. And the first thing I say in my preface of the book is dissent is expected.
Yes.
I don't pretend to own the only way to get healthy, no.
And I think there's so many different types of the word healthy, you know. Healthy might be your skin's clearing up, or healthy might be, you know, you're getting out of the car with ease. It can be so many different variables, and each one of those is a milestone in almost anyone's life, and that's just something to note. In your book, you had said that it began with destruction of some assumptions and routines. What assumptions or routines did you have to give up that you had in the past?
Oh, boy. Well, I think our whole belief system as humans, you know, it goes back, I sort of do a lot of thinking, and I guess in a deeper sense of the mind and
don't
body.
Don't worry, myself and all of our listeners are like that too.
I probably take it too far, but
oh no.
You know, it goes back to the, you know, how we developed into modern humans, you know, in the sense of our societies and things like that, where there's a lot of truths and assumptions. Well, you assume that these truths to be real, like you must degenerate with age. And back to what we were just talking about before this last question is, I'm glad I'm continually pursuing this new health, because actually I've developed in my 40s better physical function, better running, working out. I'm stronger, I'm faster than I ever was when I was in my teens or 20s. I mean, I'm better. So thank goodness I didn't assume or continue with the assumption I used to have, which you just totally get worse, because then I would not be achieving what I'm doing today. I mean, see, those are the kind of fundamental assumptions that we have. Like, for instance, I was telling an elderly lady yesterday that was on fire, that had been changing her way. She started working out. She's, you know, in her 70s, and she's losing 20 pounds over the last couple months and getting off diabetes medicines. And she's like on fire, and her face is different, her demeanor is different. And I said, you know, what's interesting is they probably would have told you can't find a physically gratifying body at any age. And she's laughing, because before she met me 6 months ago, yeah, that would have been her assumption, that you can't. But now she's believing something different. And so these are potent assumptions that we carry with us that you can find to be different. And the only way you can find these, my truths out, what I'm talking about, like, you know, you don't have to believe me. Go do it. And you can prove it to yourself. See, that's the best, is you don't have to believe me. Just go do it.
And I think so, too, what you say about bringing nourishment into your body. You know, this whole idea of when people say food is medicine, medicine is your food, blah, blah. But then you get people to start thinking, well, it said broccoli is going to cure my breast cancer, so I'm going to eat broccoli. But then they go to the store and then they purchase a frozen food item that has broccoli on the picture, and they think they're getting the same thing that to be able to cure it, you know? And that there's such a disconnect in the information about what food really is, how food is presented in its way that it's manufactured and, you know, in the food industry now, and how that food as medicine can actually, that concept, that it's just like a bunch of words thrown against the wall. It's like spaghetti, you know, throw it against the wall and see what hits. And then the woman would say, well, that didn't help, so I'm not going to eat that anymore. It's like, gosh, you just didn't get it, you know. And how hard that is a concept to be able to bring to people, where they've been thinking all along, hey, if the food people say it's got antioxidants in my soda, it must be good, right? You know, or broccoli in my frozen food that I put in the microwave, it must be good. And that's really where I think the basis and the lack of everybody's health right now is focused.
Well, and I think it speaks to just the way we like to do the more reductionistic, you know, mechanisms. That, you know, that's some of our power, but that's some of our fault. That, you know, a lot of times it's not so much the broccoli you eat today, this one moment. It's sort of, you got to be consistent in your delivery of these nutrients. And, you know, a lot of people will, you know, people always used to say about bottled water, and I was sort of like, well, I'm not sure bottled water's that much better for you. There's other water, and probably drinking water in general is better. And if the bottled water is expensive, you're going to end up not drinking very much of it. So then you've defeated the whole purpose. And it's sort of, but, you know, they'll go around sipping on that little expensive water or something, and it's like you're missing the point. It's the consumption of it routinely and everything. And I think we get caught up in these little minutiae of details, and that's where we don't see the bigger, larger perspective of our lives and how we live, how we relate to each other, how we relate to our planet, you know?
And because we also should believe that we're all part of it. I mean, when you say about water, you know, here I live in New Orleans, and let me tell you don't drink anything from the tap here. You know, the pipes are, you know, hundreds of years old. They're terrible. They've been broken by so many storms. And, you know, if you just drill down 1 foot, you're into marsh water. So, and that's where your water pipes are. It's like, nah, I don't think so. So you're really, you know, this idea that people really do need to learn from other people what potentially might not be good and say, okay, I'll make a conscious decision not to do that. Like they'll come to you and they'll find out about diet and how you've done that. And they'll come to me and they'll find out, hey, I'm not drinking my water. I checked it out and, you know, maybe it wasn't such a good thing. Or another person would say, I checked out my water supply and it's not bad, so I'm good to go. But there
exactly.
is so there's so much responsibility for the people to be able to have to do this legwork on their own. But I think that's what makes us stronger. I don't think that's what makes us weaker. You know, like I said before about giving our power to, you know, prescriptions or giving our power to the food industry to be able to take care of us. It's really about bringing our responsibility back to find out what works for us as a person.
Exactly. And like, you know, you made a great point because, right, I speak of water, but my context of water is different than people, I guess, where you are and people in Florida in general.
Right.
Where I have well water, and my well water is tested. And, in fact, the water guys were just out the other day and did their little tests on it and everything. And I have a lot of faith in my well water and believe in it, and it's very good tasting water. It's excellent. And so, right, for me, to drink bottled water would be inferior and just more costly, but it depends on where you live. I mean, there's a lot to be said about that. But I think people, it's like what you're speaking of, is people need to invest in their health and pay attention to what they're doing and how they're relating to, like, the water that they have around them. Are they using the best water? And maybe there's the better water's cheaper. It's not always newer, better, more expensive is better. But the other thing is, like, people will come in to me and will be very well-versed in their medicines, very well-versed in the dosages, the time to take the medicine, what each pills represents, you know, the cholesterol pill, the blood pressure pill, the heart pill, blah, 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 and go down the list. They'll pull out a stent. A lot of my new patients, I'm just always amazed. They'll say, I have this fancy, and they'll give the big, long name, stent. They just got put in a year ago. They'll even pull out the battery of their pacemaker, when it's going to be changed. They have it in their wallet and things like that. But I may go let them go through that whole ordeal, and then I'll say, what did you eat for breakfast this morning?
Right.
And, you know, they have to, like, think about that. Or what did you eat last night? See, those things, they don't even have a clue. And I'm like, what is important to you? I mean, what do you really think is going to be the best part of your health? And that's where I think we can get distracted on a lot of things and lose the focus on really what's important.
I think it's definitely, to the listeners, there are so many different variables between doctors and patients, where you live, how you treat yourself, and what type of health care you have. It is such a really 360 on that. Because I had a client ask me the other day, she's on a ton of medication. She'll pull out her plastic bag, you know, and put it on the table. And every morning she goes to McDonald's and she has her sausage muffin with her grits and her coffee. That is just her life. And then she'll turn around and say, oh, my goodness, you know, when I took my sugar the other day, it was 3-something. I need to do something. She's asking me. And I'm like, what did you have for breakfast, too, you know? And I said, well, she said, but I just love, you know, those, they have the pancakes and sausage and syrup. You know, I put 4 syrups on at McDonald's, and it's like, oh, Lord, but could you just change that? And she's like, that's what I eat every day. Why do I have to change that? And I just want a medicine that will take away my diabetes. And it's like, it's not that way. You know, so apparently she just wasn't ready. And there are times that I'm sure you've had this happen, and I've had it happen a lot, is that people are just not ready. They'll listen, but they're not ready. And that's okay too, right?
Well, yeah, I think you have to be ready. I think I've gotten better at readying people up, maybe with the fear, maybe with my delivery is a little more pointed and harsher than before, but loving compassion at the same time. But again, if I'm not telling you where you're going wrong, I'm not sure why you're there if you don't want me to help you, you know. So yeah. I always tell people, well, you know, if you want to play games, well, then I don't think you should take, you know, the time away from me that where other people want to be helped. So I put it back on them. You know, you can come to me when you want, but if you're going to keep living like that, you know, like I had a guy just downed, no lie, just before my first office visit yesterday, 4 Krispy Kreme donuts. I mean, and he came in. He smokes, but and I can tell because he's got stained lips and smelled of it. But he denied he smokes. And his wife told me about the Krispy Kremes on the way in. And you know, it's sort of like, well, I asked him. I said, well, I don't even think. Well, why should I draw labs on you? I mean, I'm not sure what the labs are going to do for you. I mean, yeah. Why am I giving you medicine? You're self-destructing. It's sort of like, you know, there's so many people out there that want to be well. I have to start telling people, you know, you need to move on and go somewhere else because I need to make room for the people that want to be well. I shouldn't be spending my time with people that choose not to be well. That's just not right because I'm taking time away from the others. And so I think when I put it to people like that, they get it a little bit better. And I've been able to convert people a little faster that way.
Yeah, how about this theory? Also that, you know, with the new healthcare now that it's going to have, quote, preventative care. And in my thought, preventative care is just running a test every few years, this, that, or the other, but really making no changes. And people just sit back and say, I got preventative care. I'm doing the great thing. I got my this test and that test and that test this year, so I got preventative care. And I'm sure you and I have a different version of that. I don't believe a test is preventative care. A test to me is crisis modulation. That's what I call it. You know, you're just waiting until it happens, and then you will change something in your being, you know, or you'll change your direction. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have a whole section on preventative care, but I call it health prevention, not preventative care, preventative health, because it's sort of that paradigm of medicine that is more proactive or whatever, but it's really, if you buy into it from a scientific point of view, and bear with me, I hope I don't get too scientific, but into that whole philosophy of preventive care going down the list of procedures and tests to be done, then what you're buying into also is you must remain sick.
Mm-hmm.
Because those tests and procedures have only, and most of them, like even a colonoscopy and a mammogram, have only been determined to be, and barely, beneficial in the larger populations of exposing all these people to all these things over that many years in sick population. See, if you have a healthy population, we wouldn't be doing those tests because they would not save more lives than they would hurt. So see, you're buying into a paradigm that the only value to do those tests would to be remain sick. If you become healthy or you enter life and stay healthy, those tests should not be done because none of them really are going to improve your life better than what you can do. See, it's already, you're bought into a bad philosophy. And that's scientifically proven. That colonoscopies are still not recommended by the U.S. government as the fail-safe mechanism to prevent colon cancer, the United States Preventive Health Task Force. There's simpler, cheaper ways to go about it, but yet you don't get that from the billboards and from the colonoscopy experts. See, I mean, you're buying into a belief system that you don't know the whole picture. And the same could go with all of them. But, you know, if you go down all the lists, I mean, mammograms, don't prevent breast cancer. They detect breast cancer earlier. But see, you're still getting it. And now we got the problem of overdiagnosis where people, up to 10 to 20% of breast cancers, on hindsight, weren't even cancers, but they went through chemo and such. Because if you go down and you look at over 30 years of mammography done, 30 years, the breast cancer death rate has remained the same. It has not changed the death rate from breast cancer, meaning we're finding cancers that didn't need to be found. We're finding cancers that really weren't even cancers. See, and we're taking care of things that it's a sort of an illusion. But when you look at the actual data, there's no benefit over death. And so you start to question lots of things. But see, if you get the whole story, you become confused. And that's where you've got to go back into the basics. Well, it's how you live, how you treat yourself.
And it definitely, it's very hard for people to understand the concept when they've given their power away. Like we said in the beginning of this show, is that giving your power away to others, you know? I'm just going to live my life, and every year I'm going to go to the doctor, and he's going to take care of me. He's going to tell me I'm good to go, you know? I don't worry about my health. My doctor takes care of that. And really, what does your doctor have to do with the other days and weeks and months and years that you live on your own? He's not given you back that responsibility. You know, you've kind of given it to him, and he really hasn't given it back to you. I think sometimes at the end of the visit, they need to say, now it's up to you, you know, and they don't. They say, coming back and see me in 6 months, you know, or 2 months or 2 weeks. Maybe if they didn't say that, and they said, you go fix it, you know, instead of I'm going to fix you, because really it's not about me. It's just, we're just like heading off the train that's going off the road.
Well, exactly. And you know, to just jack up the guy that ate 4 Krispy Kreme donuts before he saw me and his insulin just jacked that up is, well, without telling him, you know, gee, I don't think you need to be here. You need to move on and find another doctor or go figure your life out. I would be doing him a disservice and take away his power. But maybe if I've told him the truth, like, you need to get a grip. See, there I've put the power back on him,
right?
And there he can get well. But if he continues to jack up the insulin, he's begging for cancer. He's begging for heart disease and strokes. In fact, that's why we keep having the diabetic patient come in every 3 months, right? It's because we know that what we do doesn't matter. He's going to get sicker and sicker and sicker. The only way to treat diabetes or to if you're a diabetic, the only way to get better from diabetes is to not be diabetic, to not eat like a diabetic, to not be sedentary like the average diabetic. See, to live not like a diabetic will make you not have diabetes. And see, it's a reverse thinking.
Right. Well, you know, and also when we think about, as going back to the testing part, is these tests are they're just, this is the best knowledge we have at this time. We're going to shoot you with the radiation, and we're going to put down, this is what the radiologist is to look for, a white spot, a gray spot, a big circle, a small circle, you know? And then we say, okay, then we want you to, the radiologist to quote, measure that. Is it big, small? Then we want to know where is it on location. And then from that they decide, okay, you must have, if you have A, B, and C, you must have D as a diagnosis. When in reality, there are, every single person is so individual. You can't put 100 people in a room and say 100 people have exactly the same thing of everything, because they don't. But yet we take these tests and we give them this such a narrow, you know, way to diagnose, when that's how you end up with your false positives and false negatives and all that other, you know, stuff, where people get treatment that they shouldn't get. It's because everybody is such an individual, and testing in healthcare and can't do anything about that. They can't. I mean, they're doing what they think they can do, right?
Well, and again, it's hard to even I mean, and I've done a lot of soul searching even for my own profession of all this, and so it's not to say that mm-hmm. there's necessarily greed or power, although, you know, anybody would know that, of course, there's some of that, but we're all human, right? That's what humans do. Mm-hmm. But the thing is we all were trained that way, and there was a time right. where that's all I knew. And it wasn't like I was trying to be rich and powerful. It was just that was all I knew. And there's power in adjusting those numbers. And there's power that we see good, like, for instance. But, again, it goes back to it sets our minds up for a bias, because when we see a rescue, and I've given a lot of rescues, and I've successfully, you know, felt like I made a difference and brought somebody back to a better place, with powerful medications and all that. But at the same time, I have to separate and make sure that I don't believe that that is the only method to this madness, is to do the rescues. See, we end up with a rescue bias, a rescue of what I call a culture of rescues, where we're all looking for the rescue because we're influenced by the success of those rescues. But we're missing the fact, if we take care of ourselves, we don't need the rescue. We don't need the minutia of the data. We don't need to do these tests and exposures. Remember, back to the whole thing about the screening tests, they only apply to sick people. There are no tests for healthy people because there are not even enough healthy people in America now, since 70% are overweight or obese, to even, and the rest have other diseases and or smoke and other things. So there's so few healthy people now that are, like, really natural in their own way that you could actually do a study, because, see, and you wouldn't apply those tests to those people because they wouldn't work. And rather than, but again, that's how we get biased. All this micromanaging and the numbers going up and down, it makes us feel like we're doing something. It makes us feel like we're on the right path when it could be an illusion. And trust me, it is, a lot of it's an illusion. Just look at the fact that I always, when people start arguing about the little minutia of a test or this test or that test or what I think's best for them for a certain condition, I say, well, if, when I tell people, well, there's no need to test. Don't test, just mm-hmm. go do this. And they say, well, what, that's like flying blindly or whatever. And I say, well, how about this? We're the most tested population of humans that have ever existed, right? So if all these tests matter, why do we keep getting sick? They can't possibly matter other than make mm-hmm. us sick, because you can't argue that they matter, because we spend all this, it's almost $2.8 trillion a year on healthcare, which is, you know, 2.8 times the first 10 years of the Afghan and Iraq war combined. You know, 10 years of war, which everybody thought was a pretty big deal and a big expense, we spend 2.8 times that every year on healthcare, and we're not well. So how could you argue it's good? See, you're only looking at it from a very narrow point, because the rest of the world doesn't get tested, and they're ranked 28 times better. We're ranked 29th on longevity. I mean, so there's a huge discrepancy between what you believe to be real
right.
and what is actually real.
And I think the healthcare paradigm, as we can see it now, even with the insurance issue, is that really healthcare is defined, to me, it's fear. There is no other reason for it, because when you go to the doctor, everybody says, I have white coat fear, because you're afraid of what you think they're going to tell you. When in actuality, if you were taking care of yourself when you go, it's really, it would just be an enlightenment, more or less, you know. It would be like, okay, oh, I didn't notice that, you know, rather than, oh my gosh, what are you going to throw on me today? So, you know, with all this testing and everything, really it's just, I'm going to keep running my gamut, and you're going to tell me on that test when I'm going to hit the wall. So are you really a predictor of when I'm going to, quote, have a real crisis, and are you at the end going to be able to save me? So really healthcare in a way seems to be more of a paradigm of, you know, crisis and fear, and then being able to be saved. And really, when all of, you know, a long time ago, I mean, my grandmother lived till she was 99. All my grandmothers lived in their late 90s. They had no interventions, and they didn't take medications. My parents right now are in their 80s. They don't have any drugs at all. Myself, I mean, and my husband, you know, people will ask us, well, what kind of drugs are you taking? And we say none. And they look at us like you have 10 eyes and an antenna sticking out your nose, you know. And they're like, well, I have 6, and I might have 7 next week, but, you know, I really have to go there, and why don't you do that? And it's like they just don't want to hear. But, you know, again, I guess we have to look at there are so many people, and you and I are just not really trying to say to every 100% of the people listening to us, you must be like we are. That's not what Dr. Harp and I are saying. What we're saying is take your little baby steps and say, you know, I think I might change my mind first. When I change my mind, then I can change my actions. And I think that's what you and I are both trying to say here.
Exactly. I mean, there's a certain, no matter how you look at it, whether you're testing for this or that or not testing for this or that, there's going to be uncertainty either way. See, you don't, all you do is you change, it's sort of like the whole paradigm of medicine is, you know, we try to do things to ameliorate suffering. Well, what I've, with a little more maturity in my practice, I've developed that, yeah, that's true some of the time, but a lot of times I'm looking at it as we're really changing the nature of suffering, not really changing suffering, right. Because for every pain pill you give grandma that may actually relieve her pain, well, when her adolescent grandson steals those pain pills and takes them and then develops an addiction, and then, you know, see, we've changed the nature of suffering. Sometimes our amelioration is really giving suffering to something else. And so even to the same person, there's a lot of that going on, that you're not really fixing things. You're sort of maybe just changing the nature of it. And that's where you got to be careful.
And I think what I have done, I think I take it probably maybe one step further than that in my practice, is that when people come to me and they say these things, it's like I will go back and say, well, is it actually physical or is it something else? Are you coming to me because you need some support? Are you coming to me you need someone to talk to? Are you coming to me telling you have a pain in your heart? It's not a physical pain in your heart. It may feel like it, but it might be that your husband's getting ready to leave you or that your kids are on a path that you don't want them to be on, you know. So really, your suffering, let's redefine that at some times for some patients. Your suffering may be more of yourself, your spirit, and your soul, and your heart versus those. It's just showing up in those physical symptoms.
Well, and that's where having a context of your own life and your own way of health, where you're in tune to your body in a very positive way. You're doing the right things. You're eating right. You're exercising and being mindful and de-stressing and having a real good context. See, when something develops that's real, you'll be able to distinguish, is this a chest pain because I have a heart condition, or is it a chest pain, like you say, because I just fought with my husband or my wife's just lost her job or something, you know, I mean, and I'm just unsure about things. You know, there's a lot to be said about that.
I think a lot of times when people start the words prefacing, he's going to give me a heart attack. Okay, then your heart attack is not your heart attack. Your heart attack is what you believe, that you have a broken heart. You know, I had a client just recently where she had said that, I asked her, I said, well, what is it really that you're looking at? What is really at your core? She says, I really want to get a new heart. I want to go to the transplant doctor and get a new heart. I took her there, and the doctor said, you need to enjoy today because her heart had gone too far. And what she was really saying was that her heart was broken, and it was time for her to leave this world because she couldn't fix it. And she did. Mm-hmm. She died within 2 weeks. And how profound that is to really take that into context and resonate on that. I usually say that a few shows I've said that, where listeners would say, you know, okay, I'm going to listen to that, and I'm going to say, what in my life might need to change that way? Or what in my life, you know, words am I putting in that? And maybe how can I look at how I'm eating, as you've said in your book, and how I'm an organism. I'm not just a person that, you know, goes out and says, ooh, gimme, gimme to everything, and how I'm responsible for my own health. So I think that's so very important. And you've outlined every single thing in your book about how important all of this is.
Well, that's one thing, I want to convey to the audience, and you know, what I try to convey to people about how the nature of our identity is to me. It's, I've really divorced my thinking, and it came with time just being positive, that I'm not trying to achieve health for what people tend to usually think of why to be healthy. It's always in the context of disease. It's to run from something like a disease or a diagnosis or a complication or a test or something. But I don't look at it that way anymore. I look at it as health is desirable for me because I'm running towards something. I'm not running away. I'm running towards. I'm getting better. I'm being somebody that I never thought I could be. See, it's on another dimension level of health that is just way more desirable. And I don't think you should look at health from the quality of disease. That's just so small ball and negative and not practical. And when you bring the desire of why to be healthy into your life, you can't help but think, I'm running towards something to be better. And that's pretty relevant to the what? Here and now. It's not to live a longer life, per se. But yeah, if I keep doing this day good, I'll probably get some more. And so you'll build that in. But it's not to do that. It's to enjoy the quality of today, tomorrow, this week. It's the present. That's why I'm healthy. See, it's to enjoy the life I have now.
And I think it's more important to be able to do it as a healthy person to improve your quality of life versus saying when I go get my medical testing and gives me a drug, that will improve my life because then my numbers will come down. Well, that's totally, as you've said, is on the negative side of it. It's not about the disease at all because, you know, just thinking that you're going to keep running that disease pattern and get another drug and it will give you more time, it will give you quality of life until what? Until you die. You know, and what you're really saying is, you know, eat healthy, do healthy things, and have a great life instead of just sub-existing, maybe just exist well.
Well, and I give whole lectures on this to people that, you know, we're too often in modern medicine is the biggest guilt that really has is it usurps the power, but it does it in an abstract way. So you live for your numbers, that's abstract. We used to not measure numbers, and people see in the wild, you know, health from unhealth, and you don't have to measure it. You can see it. And I mean, that's where you get into that whole, paradigm where you get swallowed into it. And it's our bias of being human where the abstract world becomes what? Reality. It becomes
right. Real.
And there are two different things. There's a physical reality versus an abstract reality.
Well, Dr. Harp, we have just come to we buzzed through that hour like nobody's business. So if you'd like, you can give us a little bit in closing and then tell us how to reach you and how to purchase your book. That would be great.
Oh, sure. Well, in closing, just thank you so much all for listening. This has been a really good hour, and thank you, Dr. Gallagher, for having me on. I hope you pick up the Nature Vore Power book. It can be found on naturevore.com website or Barnes & Noble, Amazon. And I do want you to visit naturevorewebsite.com because they have recipes, and we're trying to make it really proactive to make things easy and practical for people's lives. I want to empower people, and so hopefully through the website and the book you can get that oomph within you, that pizzazz and that possession of your own life to make your life more meaningful and better.
Well, it was a pleasure having you with us today. I know this is such a hard concept for people to grasp. If, you know, for generations and generations, they've always lived a certain way. So I would encourage the listeners to play this over and over again, and you will pick up a few words and say, well, I don't do that. But then maybe on the 10th or 12th listening, or maybe the second, you may say, you know what, I just caught myself saying that the other day. And that's the purpose of our shows, is to really put new language into your life and give new ideas and say, well, maybe I don't have to do it the way I've been doing it. Or, you know, that would sound really cool. What if? So, hey, what if? What if you tried it? You really don't have anything to lose. So I'd like to thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Harp. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Great. And have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. So if anyone would like more information about Dr. Harp and his website, it is located on today's show page. Also, the link to directly purchase his book is also on today's show page. And you'll be able to find out, as he said, more ideas and recipes and definitely a lot of nice, really great inspirational words are on his website also. His book is terrific. It's called Nature Vor Power. It is a great book. Not a night read, I'll tell you. It's going to take you a little bit of time. But what you do is you just go through and you say, sounds interesting. Put it down. Come back to it later. Took me a little bit of time. It'll take you a little bit of time, but it has great words in there. So thank you so much for being with us today. And as always, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and hope to see you again tomorrow. Thank you.